This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Time for Fan Mail Fridays. I'm your host, Jordan Harbinger. I'm here with producer Jason DeFilippo. We'll be answering your questions and dropping some knowledge and feedback to help you kick the weekend off right. If you're new to the Art of Charm podcast, this isn't the best place to start. Most of our content is more in-depth and longer format, so check out the best of at theartofcharm.com/best or the fundamentals toolbox at theartofcharm.com/toolbox. There we've got the fundamentals of body language, nonverbal communication, attraction, negotiation, networking, and everything else we teach here at The Art of Charm. We'll send all that to your inbox if you text CHARMED, that's C-H-A-R-M-E-D, to 33444 in the USA, or if you're not in the USA, go to theartofcharm.com. All right, let's cut to it.
Hi, Jordan and the rest of The Art of Charm team. Is it fair to assess someone's character and integrity from a small incident that appears to be inconsequential? I bumped into a friend from college, we caught up, and decided to go see a football game together. He bought the tickets in advance and told me I owed him $55. I decided to give him $60, an extra $5, to cover taxes and the hassle of buying the tickets. When I gave him the $60, he didn't offer any change or acknowledge that I even paid him extra. Although I was planning to let him keep the $5, I thought it was a bit odd because most of my friends offer change or acknowledgement out of just common courtesy. Anyways, that wasn't the problem. What bugged me was when he gave me the ticket, only then did I realize that the actual ticket price was only $45. It looks like he already added an extra $10 on top of the ticket price without mentioning. Mathematically, I paid him $15 more than the actual ticket price. I didn't want to fret about it since it's not a huge amount, and I didn't want to make the situation awkward. But after some thought, I felt a bit ripped off for being misinformed of the actual price on the ticket. I'm wondering if it's fair to use this situation as a judgment call on my friend's character. Could this be an indication of bigger things to come? Especially when the stakes are higher, like if I decided to ever get into business with him one day. Or am I just overanalyzing the situation? Thank you, LeBron.
Well, LeBron, on this one, very timely name, by the way. I think it's his real name because I got this a long time ago. I think a lot of times tickets come with service fees, so let's not jump to the conclusion that he purposely ripped you off. I mean, if he made money off of you on this, then yes, this indicates how he treats money and how he treats his friends, which are both very important topics that are very personal. Never go into business with a person who tries to make money off their friends in this way. It's not a way that's fully in integrity, right? It's kind of rounding up, thinking, I'll make a little bit on the side. I would say you don't really have enough information to make this judgment call right now. If you hang out with them again, maybe go for a meal and see what happens. I have friends go through AOC boot camps, but I don't mark the price up higher just because I know those people. Trust me, it's kind of despicable. So I would say, look, there's a good chance there were taxes and fees on top of the printed price on the ticket. You really don't know, but anytime you see the way people deal with money, especially when it comes to their friends, in my opinion, it always pays to be more generous with your friends. So when you see people that don't do that or who don't offer to pay or who mark things up because they're thinking maybe they're going to pull one over, this is their operating system. It's very indicative of their operating system, and it's not just limited to your friends. You can see this with family members. You can see this with significant others. It is part of your programming that you can change, but it is part of your programming. And so don't expect this to go away either in your relationships or your friendships with other people.
And I just want to throw in here, I used to go see the LA Kings all the time down in Los Angeles. And the ticket price on the ticket does not actually reflect the service fees. Those are on the receipt. So all of the service fees are on the receipt. What you're seeing on the ticket is the actual ticket price. So he very well probably paid the fees that go along with that ticket, and just you don't get to see that on the ticket itself. That's just one of those common things that they actually do. So you know, yeah, you could keep an eye on them, I guess, but don't, I wouldn't jump to conclusions on this one just because they generally don't put service fees on the actual ticket itself.
Yeah, it's like an airplane ticket where they're like, look, this fee is only $99. Oh, gasoline. Oh, and there's taxes. Oh, and there's the airport fee. So it ends up being $150. You know, the airlines are kind of ripping you off by burying that, but, you know, your friend should probably mention that. On the other hand, he might have assumed, well, he probably knows about this, and it's, I'm not going to strut over $3 or whatever the difference ends up being. That's reasonable. We don't have enough information to assess that right now. So I would say, look, don't break the friendship over it. But if you go out for meals and he doesn't try to pay, or he says, well, I didn't have a Coke, so I'm going to pay less than you, then you're dealing with somebody who is going to be a huge pain in the future. All right, next one.
Hey there, Jordan. On a recent podcast, you shared a great idea about building a band of brothers and about being the kind of person other people would want in their group. I wonder about where this band turns into the Old Boys Network. I left a job last year at a great small company run by passionate people. Unfortunately, the tight-knit band that started the company became pretty insular. It went beyond being closed to outside ideas and stretched to basically mocking or bad-mouthing people that weren't part of their immediate circle. I worked closely with one member who I believed was doing things that were damaging to the company and to my branch. When my contract was up for renewal, I decided not to take it and I left. The branch I was part of immediately fell apart and was forced to close under the leadership of this particular member of the inner circle. It's a shame because most of the people I'm talking about are really passionate, hardworking people with tons of good qualities. How do I, or others like me, keep my own band of brothers from turning into a closed group or what I would call an old boys network? And how do we handle a group like that if we're the new employee at a new company? Thank you again for all the content. I listen to your podcast as I walk to work along this quiet little river here in Japan. I've got a great view of Mount Fuji most days, and it's a great time in my day to clear my head and let some of the amazing new ideas in. Mike.
That's pretty cool. It's very Japanese to listen to the show while walking along a quiet river. It's kind of like some kind of with a mountain in the background. Yeah, I think this is an important question, though. Look, you've got to realize the strength of your network is in the expansion of that same network. Now, this comes down to leadership, and the branch leadership was obviously pretty poor there if they weren't accepting of new ideas. But we talk about this a lot in Social Capital. We've got a whole course on this at AOC as well. But we've mentioned this a lot on the show where you have to constantly be giving ABG, right? Instead of ABC, always be closing. It's ABG, always be giving. You've got to realize the strength of the network is in the expansion, the growth of that circles. And you can't do that if you've got that old boys network. If you're going to be inside a group, you've got to make sure, along with others, that it's not closed. And if other people don't seem open to it, then you need to take leadership of helping with that expansion. And once people see the value of that, when they see, oh, when we bring new people in with new ideas, things get better, instead of having that sort of old boys bad-mouthing people who weren't in their circle. Look, humans are sort of, I guess, essentially tribal, especially us guys. We can be that way at work and competitive. And we just need to realize that that's not the best way to actually compete. The best way to compete is to have the strongest team, not the smallest, tightest knit team, especially when it comes to corporations and things like that. You've got to enforce that expansion policy. You've got to enforce that open mind. Otherwise, you're on a sinking ship. And you saw this yourself when the branch had to close due to poor leadership. All right. Next question.
Dear Jordan, where do you stand on, quote-unquote, the power of positive thinking? Is it just a gimmick, or does it really work? I lean toward thinking that it's a gimmick, but I'm waiting to hear your thoughts on the matter. Signed, For the Negative Youth.
Hey, Negative, you remind me of a friend of mine. He's grumpy, grouchy, got a rain cloud permanently hanging over his grimacing mug. But even he agrees with me on this. It's not about the power of positive thinking, it's about the power of positive actions. What I mean is that thinking good thoughts, although pleasant at times, it has very little actual effect on the real world. What does have real effect, however, are actions. These can be as simple as smiling or having better posture, which studies show help you feel more confident. What's more, if you act as if or fake it until you become it, it's not a theory anymore. It's scientific fact. And what this means is that if you cultivate the behaviors you're trying to emulate, you will eventually become that guy. And if you don't believe me, try it for a month and see where it goes. Look, I'm all for gratitude and for having that positive vibe, but it's not all all you have to do. You do have to take action and make it work. Even gratitude isn't just a thought exercise. That's why people tell you to write it down, to verbalize it. There's a lot more than just thinking positive thoughts if you want to make real strides. Hope that helps. Do keep me posted on how this works for you, because I'm a skeptic. You've seen this before. I don't love the whole, oh, just think positive and everything will be okay. But I am all about actions and thought change and behavior change. And that's what we teach here at AOC.
Hey, AOC. So I've been having this issue in the back of my mind for a little while. And after listening to Fan Mail Friday number 60, I thought you would be a great resource to get a second opinion from. I'm excited to be going back to college in the fall, so planning for that has been fun, and I'm very optimistic about the future. I broke up with my previous girlfriend a few years ago, and it took me a long time to get over her. Gratefully, I feel like I dealt with those locked up emotions earlier this year, got over her, and I've been confident enough to try going on dates and meeting new women. I'm a tad less desperate than I was earlier this year, but I still have my moments of loneliness, and I just miss being close to someone, physically and emotionally. I want to find a girl to date now, but the thing is, I know I'll be leaving the area for school in about 3 months. I don't want to start anything and have to break it off after just getting comfortable. And on the issue of finding a girl to date, I don't want to lower my standards just to get someone who will date me right away for a short period. I still want my ideal girlfriend, but I can't promise anything long term. There's this girl I've been talking to that I really like, but she isn't currently living in the same area as me and will only be geographically close for less than a month before I need to leave. What should I do? Should I look for a girl to date that is geographically close to me and will be available for the next 3 months, but then break it off with her, possibly hurting each other's feelings and ending in heartbreak? Should I hang on to this girl I've been talking to that's far away and try to work something out only for the time we have together? Or should I just play it safe and stay single until I move back to school? Thanks a ton. Hopeful, but hesitant.
Hey, hopeful. It's okay to date for 30 minutes or for 30 years as long as both parties know the score. You cannot hide the ball. You've got to manage expectations. You're obviously concerned for feelings, which is good. Just be honest with people that you date and tell them that you're moving. You're young by the look of this letter, so getting life experience right now is much more important than just finding the one, etc. So just make sure everybody knows the score. You're not going to spring the move on somebody later and hurt their feelings. But I see no problem in having short-term flings, especially when you're in your 20s, 30s, whatever. As long as expectations are managed, it's all good. Just bear in mind, no matter what happens, if you date someone for a while and it goes well, after 3 months and you move, you're going to end up with feelings no matter what. And you're going to have to deal with that.
Johnny, we know if you listen to the show, you are driven. In fact, we're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed.
If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast.
Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey.
We have hired a lot of team members over the last 17 years. Going through endless resumes, well, that's a time sink. But you know what else is a time sink? Interviewing endless people, because they're all going to give you the best face forward.
That's why we love Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every single day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets.
Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast.
And listeners of this show get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/charm. Just go to Indeed.com/charm right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/charm. Terms and conditions apply.
Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This episode is brought to you by Liquid IV. Feeling thirsty? You might already be dehydrated. Enter Liquid IV. Behind every great tasting sip is a science-backed formula of electrolytes and nutrients made to quickly replenish fluids lost from sweat. Every stick is powered by 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink. Redefine the refresh with Liquid IV, also available in sugar-free. Tear, pour, live more. Visit us at liquidiv.com.
Hi, Jordan. My question revolves around freelancing. I'm an event planner and fundraising consultant. I work almost exclusively with nonprofit organizations to plan and execute annual fundraising galas. As my business has grown, I've been asked if I have plans to expand, and friends joke that if I'm ever hiring, that they want to work for me. I've considered expanding the business, but have decided to keep things as they are for multiple reasons. I bootstrapped my company and want to be mindful of the financial implications of taking on full or part-time employees. I'm realistic about the cash flow situation of an industry that ebbs and flows. It's normal for me to go from Thanksgiving to Valentine's Day with no events and no income other than some monthly retainers. And I know my personal preferences when it comes to work style. At the moment, I'm a one-woman shop, but with 10 to 12 people on a list that I can call in for a night of assistance at any event. And right now, that business model works for me. Last year, I worked on 27 galas, and of those, only 5 required me to hire additional staff to flush out registration positions that couldn't be filled by the client's staff or volunteers. I don't have enough work to keep someone employed year-round unless I actively grow the business, and that's just not where my focus is right now. My question is, when someone refers to me as a freelancer, how do I respond without sounding overly negative? This happens occasionally, usually from a friend or other social acquaintance, and something about being referred to as a freelancer always rubs me the wrong way. To be clear, I have no issue with freelancing in general. I worked in the performing arts for years and have lots of artists and teacher friends who freelance. It's just not how I see myself. I've all the paperwork in place to establish my corporate identity, insurance, licensing, separate bank accounts, all the things you do when you set up a company. I'm certified with the Women's Business Enterprise National Council as a woman-owned small business. I cringe at words like solopreneur and haven't given myself a title of CEO because of my structure, but I do think of myself as a small business owner. So when someone says something to me like, "Oh, I don't know how you do it. I could never be a freelancer," I find myself wanting to check them and explain that I run a company, but I always struggle with how to say it and not come across sounding like a jerk. It seems that without a roster of year-round, full or part-time employees, somehow I'm not deemed as being a legitimate business. Am I overreacting? Or is this an issue that other people encounter? I love what I do and have been happier in the last 4 years than ever before. I'm definitely suited to being my own boss, and I'd love to hear your thoughts. Thanks, Beth.
Hey, Beth. Ugh, people are such unintentional a-holes. I totally hear you on this. For me, I'd say something like, and I'm using a super friendly tone here, "Oh, I'm not a freelancer. I own the company." Instead of "I own a company," it's "I own the company." That might get them asking, "What company?" And then you can explain what the heck you do to these uneducated punks. But seriously, I feel your pain. Last week, my aunt actually said, "I seriously don't even get what you do and why anyone would give you money for it." I almost told her I was considering paying off her mortgage with last month's paycheck, but of course I refrained. You know, it's hard to keep your own ego in check even when people you love that have known you your whole life still refuse to understand what it is we do around here. So I do get it, Beth, and I think phrasing it in this certain way will allow you to explain what you do without coming across as defensive. Hope you all enjoyed that. Don't forget, you can email us friday@theartofcharm.com to get your questions answered on the air. A link to this blog post can be found at theartofcharm.com/FMF68. Also, don't forget the Art of Charm Challenge. Text CHARMED, that's CHARMED, to 33444 in the USA. Or if you're outside the US, go to theartofcharm.com. We'll take you step by step and help you become a better networker, better at making personal and professional connections, increasing your personal social capital and charisma, and it's for both guys and gals. So check that out. Text CHARMED, that's CHARMED, to 33444 in the USA, or go to theartofcharm.com. Quick shout out to Gore Sam and his EDC, that's Electric Daisy Carnival, who recognized me in the security line at the venue with 140,000 plus other people. And then they ran into Jonah Hill. What a great time. I hope you guys had as much fun as I did. What a great party. Are you in a strange land listening to my familiar voice? If so, hit me up and I'll shout you out. More from AOC at theartofcharm.com. Now stay charming, get out there and connect, and leave everyone better than you found them.
Thanks for listening to The Art of Charm. Get more confidence, relationship skills, life hacks, and more at theartofcharmpodcast.com.